Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Josh Brown, in a month absolutely dominated by video games returning, we're going to talk a little bit about Sifu and a whole bunch of other stuff too, because there's just so much of it. But I should also say that I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
In person, surrounded by the sound foam, so we can do all sorts of things, and it should be nice and crispy.
I hope so. I mean, I hope I'm not yelling too loud. That's the thing. I'm used to doing that in my flat, but I'm in front of a microphone at the moment.
That's a problem for post-processing Tilford to figure out, and not for right now. But this is the wind-up, where we always talk about the latest things, the latest news, the latest games, whatever we want to talk about, because we're both getting through a lot of games at the minute, and both of us have finished Sifu. I finished Horizon. You're about to finish Horizon, and we'll do a group podcast, me, you, and Ben Roy, on Wednesday, and we'll see. I want to see where Ben Roy's at, because he thinks he's got some takes. He's got some things to say, and obviously people who checked in the wind up last week will remember me and you just going at it for about 40 odd minutes on Horizon.
You know what, I think that's one of the most satisfying pods we've ever done. I think I thought that was really, really good. Not to toot our own horns, but I thought that was an all right one.
No, it was great. I think one of the reason I think I said this last week that we started calling it the wind up was because we nearly always disagree on stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel that coming with Horizon overall. But that's something for the rest of 2022 to figure out. Because that game is, I'm not going to say it's divisive because it's not. It's clearly being received very, very well. But there's a tiny pocket of people just sort of doing the Thor twisted face going, is it? Is it, or is it really? Is it? And I think I'm that person.
Yeah.
So, and I think that might be where Ben Roy is. But we'll find out on the main podcast. Come back on Wednesday, see how we all do. Speaking of seeing things.
Very good.
Sifu. And because we both finished Sifu, I'm 2 trophies off the platinum. And that game, we're going to talk about this because I feel like Sifu is worth highlighting because it's in danger of being completely buried by Horizon, Cyberpunk's revival, Oli Oli World, Elden Ring. I feel like I'm missing something. Maybe I'm not Windjammers 2, the tail end of that. Not that anyone's playing that game, but Sifu overall, what did you think of it now that you finished it? Because your Adonis skills got you through. You flew through with hardly any upgrades, kind of like you did with Hades. and then it was me like sort of getting through it, and I've managed to clock it and stuff too. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Sifu after getting through the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. It was good enough to pull me away from Horizon. You know, I was playing that like mad, and then Sifu dropped, and I just thought, I need to play this. I need to bank it. So I played it for like 15 hours or so, like you said. You know, got to the end, went back a little bit, tested, flexed my skills, should I say, after beating the final boss. And yeah, I just think it's such a solid game that, to use a Tailfordian expression, you could just sort of like drink it up, you know what I mean? Yeah. When you're living in Sifu, it feels great, and it kind of got me in the same mental state as Returnal, where I was like up all night trying to do one more run, seeing how far I could get, see if I could get my age down. And I just think it had that kind of like level of addictiveness and that level of you know, it's tightness, more, precision.
One more run.
Yeah, that one more run mentality that just, you know, it took me away for 3 days, 3 or 4 days, and I loved it. And I want to get back to it once the games have settled down right. a bit at the end of February.
It was so funny because I remember when you messaged me and you were like, I think you did the first level almost first time. I watched Jules do a stream on it because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'll watch Jules, maybe he'll die a lot and it'll make me feel better. No, he didn't. Go all the way through to the third boss or something. He beat the second boss like his first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, is everyone just skating? But then you look at the trophy percentages for this game and they are massively off. Like there's a huge drop off. Last I checked, it was about 80% of people getting through the first level and about 30% of people getting through the second level. And they have patched Sean, the second boss, to try and get people through.
Really?
They literally patched how aggressive he is. People did a side by side, literal animation frame comparison in terms of he'll come at you with a 3 to 5 hit combo. You can duck most of it or sway out of the way of it. And then the old version of him would keep the pressure on and stay close to you and follow up with one of the orange attacks, which are harder to block. Now he steps away.
Interesting because, you know, I managed to get Sean down at the end, but one part of that fight that always gave me bother was right when you're close to beating him, when he's got like less than a third of his health, he gets so aggressive and you need to be like on the ball and he'll always like, more or less, he'll like hit you and he gets so aggressive. So that's interesting that they've dialed that back because that to me never felt really unfair, but I was kind of, it would annoy me every time I got to that stage.
Just to reveal to the audience, I got very annoyed the other night. I got very, very annoyed. I'm not going to say what I did in the end.
Tell what you did.
I bit a controller, Josh Brown. I just needed to do something. And I was like, oh my God. And it's not, something about being that frustrated about a game just puts me in like a feral childish state. And it's only me doing it. Like my wife had gone to bed. It was like 1 a.m. All I was trying to do was this one trophy, which is you got to get 5,000 score on one level. I'm going to say I've never bit a controller before. I know Jules has when he was a child. And so I was trying to get this one score where it's like get 5,000 points in one level. And I was like Googling like, okay, what's the best level to do this on? And a couple of different websites had said do it on the first level because it's in theory, it's the easiest one. But you can't die. And if you get hit, it'll take you out of your multiplier that you need to maintain to get 5,000 score. And so I tried that over and over again, kept getting jabs because there's always some enemy that just jabs you out of nowhere, took the multiplier down again. And every time that happened, I would just hit pause, restart. An hour went by, 2 hours went by.
Right.
There's always a jab. There's always one little jab that gets in the way. I eventually got all the way through the level, avoiding everything. I got to the very end and my score was 4,920 and I got jabbed again.
Oh.
And I went, and I just got the controller. I bit the controller.
The interesting thing about that is, right, Scott, I wonder, because I got that trophy, but I wasn't trying to get the trophy. Mm. And I think sometimes when you're playing one of those games, if you have a specific goal in mind and you're just trying to do it, like you get the yips, you know what I mean? You overthink it. The yips is when you overthink something that is usually so simple or comes naturally to you to the point where suddenly you can't do it. Like
that's me and you doing thumbnails for the channel every single morning. Yeah.
This morning's news video. Yeah. Yes, it is. But sometimes I get that when I'm, especially if I'm trying to get a very specific thing. Mm. Whereas I got that trophy by doing what you mentioned there, going back to the first level. But I wasn't trying to get it. It was just because I was frustrated with the final boss. And I was like, well, I'll try maybe getting a different build. And I went back and just, you know, wrecked all the boys.
The thing is, Sifu is one of the best flow state games ever.
Yeah.
Like, I can play that game perfectly when I'm having a conversation with someone. Like, my mind's not even on it. And I'm dodging everything. The multipliers are sky high. Yeah.
It's funny how that works, man. Like, I want to know the psychology of it. Because when I was playing that or Returnal or any kind of game like that, for me, I do better when I've got music over the top. If I've got Spotify linked to it. And the best runs I had in Sifu were the ones where I was just kind of, no, you're paying attention, but like I said, you're not overthinking it. Yeah, it's in you. You're just kind of like going off instinct and muscle memory and what you've learned. Mm. And you kind of like have this layer of detachment from the music. And that's when I did, you know, that's how I beat it. That's how I did the best runs, how I got that trophy and stuff. So stuff I'm always fascinated by.
The thing to point out is that, so I will say to anybody listening who wants the 5,000 score, just go do it in the club. Just go to the club,
eh?
Because the club has way more enemies. It's way easier to get your multiplier up. Also, if you go to the museum first and find the Absolver mask, or you can find a whole bunch of masks on the third or fourth tier of the museum, the third level of the museum.
Yeah.
I don't think what it's called. Floor is the word that I want. You can find a mask display, and if you find a certain mask in there, it'll give you a focus move called the Calvert.
Okay.
And if you use the Calvert, which is the one where you go to attack someone, and then you fake them out and tap them on the back of the head, you get a times 5 multiplier right there.
Right.
So if you drop it, If someone jabs you and you lose the multiplier, just use Calibur to get it back up again and then keep going. I did that in the club and I got 7,000 score.
Wow.
I was like, that is how it should be.
See?
And also, Sifu, it was brilliant.
That sounds like a really good tip. But the club itself is an interest. It's interesting that you did it there. Mm. Because for me, the club was full of little mad heads who would always get that chip damage, you know, that little jab in or something. Those yellow guys, man. Those yellow guys, yeah. The big lad with his top off who like hits you so hard and it's so hard to deflect him. Mm. He's often teamed with a lass who's like really agile and fast, you know what I mean?
They're the ones who they attack in different rhythms. Also, when I say yellow guys, there's a yellow aura that some of them get. Sometimes you do focus moves and they'll counter you and throw you off, and then they ignite in like a yellow flame.
Yes.
And then they get annoying as hell. Yeah. Their timings change. They're doing like four string attack combos. All your muscle memory goes out the window. It's infuriating.
Well, what I love about this game is that there's like such depth to it. Like you said, you know, you went through unlocking all of the upgrades and moves that you could get, whereas I just sort of did it. I like kind of brute forced it. I wish. I like brute forced it with just kind of like doing it with what I knew. I had like four moves unlocked and that's all I needed to get me through. But I feel like there's a whole layer of it, not only in the mechanics, but also in the story that I wouldn't appreciate until the second time around.
Yeah. So the thing is, because right now it's my game of the year. I think that it'll be easy to beat because I think it's only up there because nothing else has blown me away this much. But there's an extra level to Sifu that you get when you beat it. And where, like, you know, you're driven by vengeance. The whole story is that your character's father, master, has been killed by this person that you play as in the intro, and then you get killed as well. And it's like you're on this big sort of like bloody vengeance kick or whatever, and you're just driven by rage and anger, and you're out to get blood, which is a great way to manifest that you are just taking these bosses out as best you can. And then when you defeat the final boss, your character looks a bit sad, and just sort of you kind of get this great emotion from him where it's like, oh, was it all worth it? And then it just cuts to black. You don't get credits. And then you go back to the hideout where you're prepping again, and you get told, I think the game literally spells out, it says now you can spare enemies, or like there's something it tells you that propels you. It's like maybe there's something else here that you should go seek out. And so you figure out that if you go back to the bosses and defeat them stamina-wise, you need to break them twice. If you break them twice, you'll get the option to spare them. And then that's the true ending. You need to have mastered the game's combat enough so that you can withstand almost a 1.5 length fight with them, so that you can literally learn how to weave and block everything, like take everything they can throw at you, completely block all of it, spare all of them, and then you get the true ending. Mm-hmm. And they talk about Wude, which I've not looked into Wude, but apparently Wude is like this sort of peaceful mindset. It seems to be the opposite of Kung Fu or whatever, if I'm interpreting it from the game. But like various characters talk about mastering Wude, and that seems to be where your character's mindset is at by the end.
Yeah.
And I also love that because of the death mechanic where you're resetting over and over again, and you kind of think that the whole game takes place in your character's head, but they planted enough seeds that you're actually like transporting your consciousness back in time or whatever it is. Because if you like, it almost Dark Souls it. If you pick up all the bits of lore, and you take keys from later levels and then go back in time and open doors that were locked in the first area or whatever, you find all this lore about the Guardians and what was going on in the background and this ancient cabal of people who messed with time. And it was just so cool. And I was like, oh, there's all these layers to this.
That's fascinating.
You know, like rewarding to do a whole other like loop over and over again. And meta-narratively or meta-textually, it is about mastering the core mentality of why you would study a martial art.
Yeah.
Like, or why you would, you know, enter into that headspace at all. And it's just that thing where like, it's like Yoda. It's like, it's quick to anger and like, you know, all that kind of thing, all the crossovers of mysticism and, you know, mastering a martial art. But I was like, there's a mindset to this that is actually quite peaceful in the end. And it's just like, yeah, I love everything that it does, but goddamn, I still bought a bit of controller. So what can you do?
Well, no, it's great that you mentioned all that, because I thought it was a game about battering lads.
It is,
and
a bit.
Braying them and shucking them off.
Kicking stools into their legs and mostly, running up and punching them in the face.
Yeah, shinning them was most of the story what I got. But obviously, you know, I just only played it once. Even though I was getting a lot of the unlockables and I was going back to those hidden rooms that you mentioned, like I wasn't even necessarily interested in piecing it together. To me, it was very much a Hitman 2 situation. Mm. We've talked about this before, where when I played Hitman, it was just a sandbox and the story was so secondary that it didn't take any of it in. And it was the same here, where I was just so focused on the mechanics. I didn't take the story in necessarily, but I like that it's got all of these layers to reward people who will go back and will interrogate it, you know, over and over again.
Because I think that's one of the beautiful things about it, is that they don't give you that much on the first run, because you should be solely focused on twatting the living hell out of everything, including all the bosses. And even before you get to Fajar, who's the first boss, or Fajar, there's a locked door. And I think a lot of people will subconsciously remember that, because you eventually pick up a key in the museum that says, like, oh, this is for that locked door, and it shows you a picture of it. And so that's your first sort of hint of like, oh, I'm going to have to go back in time to get through that door to find out more about what happened with Fajar. And then all that stuff links into the final area, like the sanctuary and what's going on there. And I just love the way it all interconnects. But like, yeah, it is still brutally hard. I kind of wonder if anyone else is even going to bother with this. But overall, like, I do love that it's like, the way they dole it out, it's like, if you just keep scratching at the surface, there's enough little things to sort of pull at, and it's like, oh, there is actually a lot here that they could build on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my worry going into it that it was going to be short or maybe like lacking in content, and I don't think that's the case. I think it, you know, feels like a big game. It feels much bigger than I ever expected it to be, not just in the narrative, but also in like the depth and the complexity of the game mechanics and stuff. It's funny that you mentioned that door, because I did also subconsciously, you know, note that down and I wanted to go back immediately, but I was disappointed when there wasn't like a weapon in there, because I thought there was going to be something that helps you beat the boss quicker or something like that. I thought it was going to be very mechanic driven, and obviously it was building the story.
One super quick thing is that I love the Breath of the Wildian thing of everything you needed to beat everything was in you all along. Like, you just have to master it, and it's just like all those perfect dodges are all in you. It's just timing, and
it's true. But also, a bit of wood helps. You know, a plank of wood you can pick up.
A bit of wood helps drown very much. I mean, that's the thing, is that you can obviously spec towards all the damage buffs and like weapon durability, and you can literally take a bamboo stick with you from the beginning to the end.
Would you recommend this to everyone? Because I loved, you know, I'm not sure if anyone knows this, but I loved Returnal last year. It was my game of the year. But I wouldn't recommend it to everyone.
Right.
Does Sifu, I almost call it Sifu, been calling it Sifu over and over again all the time.
Sifu.
Keep making that mistake. Is Sifu more accessible in that regard?
Oh, no? God. I think it's more accessible. I think pretty much anybody would get through the stones, the first level. Maybe that's the thing. I think that it's such a brutal brick wall. The key thing that made me hate Returnal is that I'd never felt like it told me what I was doing wrong.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was like in this game where you get jabbed out of nowhere, you at least know, well, I should have pressed L1 there or whatever. Whereas in Returnal, I was dying through a laser that came through the wall behind me, or like I was just getting sniped by some auto homing missile. And I never knew what it was. And I also think in terms of like literal calibration, the runs that you do in Returnal are like 40 odd minutes long, and then you just get kicked back to the start, and it's like, well, what was that even for? Whereas like, at least in Sifu, there's always XP carryover, or you are like learning your muscle memory and things like that. So it's weird. I want everybody to play it, but it has such a brutal, I mean, you can literally tell in the trophy data.
Yeah.
Like, some people threw themselves at it, got all the way to the second boss, and then just got flattened and went, okay, sorry. Like, I'm going to have to give it a minute. But what about you? Do you think, like, of the two, how do they line up in terms of accessibility and recommendability?
I think so. And I think Returnal's kind of solved this now, because I know it added in a suspend feature, but I think, like you said, you know, the big differentiation between the two is the length of the runs. You know, some of Sifu's levels can be quite lengthy.
Simon Sifu, that's the full name.
That's him. Yes. Some of the levels can be quite long. You know, if you're doing the full run of the club, for instance, it might be like 40 minutes, 45 minutes, including the boss, maybe an hour. But when you get shortcuts, like, that time drops drastically. Yeah. So I think it's better if you have a schedule, for instance, where you only get half an hour to game a day. So you can jump in, you can try the club again. Would you not agree?
Because the thing is, if you get like jabbed and then you get knocked back, it's like, well, I didn't accomplish anything in that half an hour. That would be me anyway. I wouldn't be able to get anywhere.
I know what you mean. I suppose that's true. But I think you have to get jabbed quite hard.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I think the death mechanic is way more forgiving than in Returnal, obviously, because Returnal is a roguelike. But I think that even if you die or something, unless you're going for the perfect run, like me and you were towards the very end, like, just getting through one of those levels is a reward in itself. So then if you got through level 3, for instance, age 55, and you might know that you probably aren't going to finish the game off that save, at least you've got to the end of the level, at least you've acquired some knowledge, at least maybe you've tried a build, and then the next night, if you had another half an hour, you could go back and try it again to improve
it. Like,
think you get more progression.
Yeah, I love that they give you, like, obviously it's on PlayStation, so PS4, PS5 versions, but I love that they give you, it's a nice set of incremental trophies. Like, even when you've, obviously you get a trophy for beating each boss, you get one for beating the game, you get one for amassing all the things you can find per level, so you're building that detective board of, like, all the different bosses' weaknesses and stuff. And then you also get stuff for when you spare each individual boss. So they are trying to push you towards seeing all of it. I think all that stuff is very intelligently designed. Like, it's a really nice matrix of, like, this becomes this, and I think it does encourage you to see everything. The two trophies that I've got left now are beat the whole game less than 50 years old, which seems very doable.
Yeah.
I say this now, I'll buy another controller.
No, you can do it. I did it age 51, and that was without, like, you know, right, trying to get that trophy.
I would have deleted it. That's another thing I didn't tell you. Because I got so annoyed, I bit the controller, and then I deleted Sifu, and then I went on the library, and I hit it. And I was like, no, get out of my life, Sifu.
Hit it.
I don't even want to see you. And then it was days later, I was like, well, I can't let it beat me. I had to unhit it, and I reinstalled it, and then I did stuff. But that's the whole thing, you know, getting back to the trophy thing, is like, I think I can do the level, age 50 thing, because I'll just take the shortcuts and I'll just run straight there. I know how to sway out the way of everything. Now, whereas doing the whole game and doing it less than 25, that feels like that's going to kill me.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
that means you can't die, three times in a certain level.
I mean, you could die five times if you keep resetting your death counter, but that would be, true, you'd have to keep on top of it.
You'd still be aging up. It's just that your death counter would go down. So yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of the yips though, like, beat the final boss, swayed out of the way of everything, absolutely demolished him, felt incredible, went back to the stones, got killed by the first person with a pipe. I was just like, what am I? I knew what to do. Like, how did you?
That's fine, man. Because your brain's on a very specific enemy. You know, your brain and your muscle memory is focused on blocking those jabs, blocking those haymakers coming in. A pipe. He doesn't have a pipe at the very end of the game. It's not the same.
We mentioned that guy before that changes up the timing, and there's something, because you're trying to memorize all the timing. Any enemies can hit you at all times. I will say, as a genuine negative, I think the camera can really suck in this.
It really can.
Sometimes it can get really stuck in the environment. It can absolutely cause you to die.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, the enemies, it's just that classic thing of, you know, you back up into the camera, it's stuck on some level geometry or something, and then all the enemies pile in, and all you see is the hit markers of you getting hit, and you're like, well, guess I'll die then.
I had an issue as well in some of the later levels where it's like, it was too dark, and when I was kicking enemies into shadows, like, my brightness was calibrated properly, but I was kicking fellas into shadows, and then, like, it would just be too dark to see what they were doing, what they were winding up. I could just see the health bar. And I was like, that kind of sucks. The camera thing kind of sucks. It's not like a huge deal, but when you're on those final runs, you know what I mean? And every hit counts, it could be frustrating.
I kind of wish you could unlock a focus move that let you detect if a bottle was going to be thrown at you as well. Because that was another thing, trying to do that whole level on one infinite combo, and a bottle just comes out of the frame and smashes me in the side of the head.
Here, man, for 5 years, I've been wanting to do, like, the best bottle chuckers in video game history, because it's unreal to throw a bottle in The Last of Us. It's unreal to do it in this game. Like, just absolutely hoying one off someone's noggin.
If you time it so that it's the one that knocks them out, you get such a little bass, like, boom, like, alongside it as well. I will also throw in James Earl Cash's bottle throw from Manhunt. I'm just thinking of bottle throws at this stage. But yeah, it's one of those things that just, like, of all the different moves they give you, and they give you a lot, especially in the earlier tiers, if you start banking, like, the XP to unlock stuff before, because they age out, so once you're past, like, age 29, you can't access the stuff that's in the 20s bracket and the 30s bracket, but the stuff that's in the 20s and the 30s is, like, sprinting attacks and more sort of devastating focus moves. Like, you can do one with a blade where it's, like, you have to, like, if you invest entirely in your focus bar, have three pips to use, you can bank that on just cutting a guy's leg.
Well, tell me more about this before, if we move on. I don't know how much we've got to talk about this. But I don't want to move on. I want to talk about this. Tell me more about this, you know, the actual combos that you can unlock. Because like I said, you know, I went through the game and I unlocked the ability to kick things on the floor. I unlocked the ability to catch things thrown at me. I unlocked the roundhouse kick that is triangle, triangle, gap, triangle.
Oh, and interesting.
The last one that I unlocked was, what was the last one? It was the focus move where you do the leg sweep. Those were the only moves that I had
for the game. You got a fifth maybe of what I've got. Like, I mean, yeah, they're all fundamental moves, especially the leg sweep, because you can use it on bosses and stuff. But there's a lot more stuff you can factor into combos. Like, one thing as well is a feint that you can get by pressing square then triangle straight away, and your character sort of, like, whips around and puts their back to someone, and then you press triangle, and then you do a really sick roundhouse that just can catch, like, four guys at once.
Nice.
That's really cool. Did you not get the 360 swipe with the stick as well?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, if you have two focus bars and you have a...
I never got past one focus bar.
Phenomenal. If you had two focus bars and you have a bow staff, you can do the Neo move from Matrix Reloaded where you just spin around.
That's
and everyone
awesome.
Around you just gets wiped out. It's great. But yeah, if you have three focus bars, you can do the knife thing where you just like slice a guy's leg. But there's a lot of other stuff. There's you can tank hits. You can unlock a move where you hold L1 to block and then press triangle and you'll tank whatever's coming at you, absorb the damage, but still jab them back so you can counter that way. You get a move where you can hold square to duck whatever's coming at you and punch back. So there's kind of moves like that. There's also, it's a bit Mortal Kombat-y where everything can be factored into every other combo. So if you unlock the crotch punch, for example, which is double forward square.
I wish I saw that.
That's a really nice crotch punch. It's not as nice as Johnny Cage's, but it's a nice little crotch punch. And if you do that, you know, you can do that in the middle of any other combo. So you can end on it, you can start on it, you can factor it in. But yeah, you get a ground counter as well. So there's those pesky pipe lads. If they come at you for that finishing blow, you just counter them. You do like a leg sweep and then you get back on top of them and you kill them instead. It's just, they really flesh these things out. I think that, like I said, the most of the most usable ones, like in terms of literal utility per scenario, are in the younger brackets. So it's one of those things where they almost punish people who are getting killed more because you'll age up faster.
Yeah.
And then you won't be able to get the stuff that, you know, because like one of them is like a running, you press triangle, you do a running leg sweep. So you immediately put them in the down state.
Yeah.
And then you can get on top for another two.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I wonder if that's like a kind of weird catch-22 because, you know, if you're not so good at the game, you'll be repeating those early stages over and over again and dying a lot. So I wonder whether they make those the first unlock so that people prioritize them so then maybe they unlock them permanently.
The weird thing that skews that is that all their XP allowances are 1,000 or 1,200 or whatever, which is a lot in this game. You barely get that amount in the staunts unless you're maximizing a times 5 multiplier or whatever anyway. So little things like that, I can see the argument for those not being balanced as well as they could, but I just think that they're skewing towards payoff over time.
Yeah.
And it asks a lot of you, I think. Like, it depends what anyone's individual predilection towards frustration is, but I know that it's right there at all times. It's like a little demon to my right side.
Dude, what are you going to do? Like, double teaming this with Elden Ring at the weekend?
I've never said this on a public forum, but when I was a child, I snapped a TV remote.
Did you really? So
annoyed playing Jet Li's Rise to Honor, because in that game, you could attack the enemies and they could interrupt you, but when they attacked you, you couldn't interrupt them.
Right.
And I was very young. I don't know when that game came out, 2005, and maybe younger than that. And I was playing that game, and then they just interrupt my combo, and then fly at me. And I was like, and I just snapped the TV remote. And then I looked at it going, well, that's, I can't take that back. I've done something horrible there. And then I didn't get frustrated at all for like 15 years or whatever.
That's good, that.
So I just sort of went, okay, I've hit my limit. I can recognize that's the maximum of what a human should do when they're frustrated. And it's stupid and humiliating, and don't do it again. Enter Sifu, and all this mentality comes back again. I'm just, can you just let me attack the thing?
I'm getting worse with age, man. I was playing Horizon and Forbidden West last night, and I was in one of the relic ruins. I was trying to solve a puzzle in there, right, and I couldn't figure it out. And I was so annoyed that my girlfriend was trying to help me at the time, and she was like, just chill out, man. Like, this, have some patience.
So I was like, just turn it off. No. Because then it wins. Yeah. And it's that card.
I can't get beat by a relic ruin. Exactly. You know what I mean? A puzzle. The puzzles in Horizon as well are like, they're so obvious. And yeah, it's unbeatable.
Go to the shiny thing underwater. It's, yeah, it's probably down there.
And if you don't do it, you know, within 30 seconds, a character will say, this is the answer, by the way. So you can move on.
I love when you try and take a breather from anything in Horizon, and Aloy just repeatedly says over and over again, I really should get to that place. I really should. I know, Aloy. Like, I am you. Like, I'm fully aware of what's going on.
I think it's funny. Me, Scott, and Ash, our friend Ash Millman, were talking about this game. I think the one thing we all agreed on was the fact that that dialogue where you just try to veer off and then you're constantly reminded to do the exact same thing over and over again. Uh-huh. And sometimes it keeps triggering. Even when you're in a cutscene and Aloy saying something else, you can hear her overdubbed, like she's haunting you during those scenes, man. Crazy.
The thing is as well, we'll transition into Horizon. Sifu, phenomenal game. Yeah. Recommendable, but just know that it's going to ask a lot of you. I think that is intentional because you're meant to overcome that, and that is part of the sort of meta value of... I hate how the word meta is poisoned these days, because it used to be a cool little word for, like, you know, almost a fourth wall break or whatever. But the meta of Sifu, you are going to understand how frustrating you're getting and then find peace and find Wude and everything else. Phenomenal game. Horizon Forbidden West, though, is very much built to be this big, opulent, you know, I think it's too close to the Ubisoft formula, but it's that style open world. There's a lot of stuff to go do. But then in regards to Aloy, the more stuff you do that isn't the main path, the more she just keeps trying to get you back on the main path again.
It's funny to play, man, because I... spent about 20 hours just doing side stuff, just like mopping up the open world, kind of Death Stranding it. You know, I was having a great time, but it was funny because I got to this point in one of the side missions, you know, obviously not to spoil anything, but Silence popped up, who was very much featured in the first third of the game prominently, then kind of disappears for reasons that I won't say. And then he kind of, like, someone said his name and he popped up again. And I was like, I forgot about you. I forgot you were in this game. And that's my fault for, you know, prioritizing all the side stuff. But it's, like, it's a strangely paced.
Like, Aloy's not seen him for, like, weeks at this point. Yeah. Whereas my Aloy went to see him the next day, or maybe later that day. Because, like, I was getting through it for review. So I was, like, burning through it, doing little handfuls of side stuff to just see what was going on, the caliber of the side qualities, side mission stuff. But I was, like, mainlining the main stuff. But you've played, I think, 50 odd hours of Horizon.
Yes.
Now. So where are you on it overall? Because I come across very negative on it, but it's because I focus on the negatives. There's absolutely a conversation that can be had just focusing on the positives.
Totally.
However, I just keep thinking that all those positives were in Zero Dawn. And that's my main thing, is that I don't think Forbidden West brings enough to the table.
I know what you mean. I think that's a totally, you know, valid criticism, a valid take. It is very much Zero Dawn, like, beefed up. You know, it's more of the same in a lot of ways. To me, I like the way that they've polished a lot of the stuff. I think it's still, you know, incredibly entertaining to play, entertaining to watch unfold. I've played... Yeah, like you said, 56 hours now. I've got two story missions left.
So close.
And I know, and I wish I could have stayed up last night, but I was just like, I can't. I've played it all day.
2 a.m. is when the controllers get thrown, so you want to avoid that, mate.
Exactly, I needed to go to bed. But yeah, kind of just echoing what I said on last week's podcast, I'm pretty much the same where I was there. Back then, I thought that it might be able to break out into 4.5-star territory.
Right.
It hasn't quite done that for me. It's a very, very, very solid 4-star, and I'm really loving it, and I love mopping everything up.
Are we going to end up agreeing? Because I gave it 4 stars.
Well, it's funny. I think we said this last week. We both have the same score. We just had very radically different positives and negatives on it. But yeah, there's a lot of things that I would certainly improve, especially when it comes to the story and the writing of the characters. But I think as a game, as a open world game, I couldn't disagree with you more when you compare it to Ubisoft stuff. Because I look at, you know, things like Assassin's Creed Valhalla that I forced myself to complete. Mm-hmm. And this is the opposite. You know, I got to the end of this game, and I was like, I could have done with some more. I wish the left hand side of the map was maybe a little bit larger for more stuff to be you know,
it's
packed
weird,
in there.
Like, as an overall structure, because it is this big wide diamond, Horizon in this case, it's a really, really wide diamond thing. It's like you start in this little, in there, the Dawn to whatever it's called, which I think is a horrible opening bit. Like, What was his little face?
I don't know what. Horrible. That's harsh.
The opening of this game has horrendous pacing. I think it makes a terrible first impression. I think that they do a weird. It's almost like you're playing the epilogue for the previous game as the opening for this.
That's true, yeah.
And it's really, really weird. All the stuff with the Sun King, and he's trying to get Aloy to be like his bride or something. And it's like, what is that conversation? And that was really weird. And then you sort of go down into this place called the Daunt, and you go to Chainscrape, which is a lot of the dialogue in Chainscrape for me broke everything because it was way too modern. It was just way too. It just felt like I was like watching any, you know, sort of, you know, any random show that's on TV right now. And that was just really weird. And then the Daunt itself is this little pocket of like kind of some side stuff and kind of things that are going on with this guy that's this like foreman called Ulvund who's trying to like exploit the workforce. And it's like you get a little window into like, well, you can kind of get some agency in there and you can kind of like cause things to happen, but it's still not the game proper.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to go to this like summit, this embassy, and then you meet the Tanakh and then you meet Regala, the main villain or one of the main villains. And then like things open up from there, but that's like a 10-hour stint, if not more, if you spend more time there. And I just think, I don't know why it takes so long to get there. And if they want to do those scenes, like, it's just, it's a weird bridge where they try and go like, well, people love Zero Dawn, so we should tie off this Meridian stuff. But I just think it drags its feet for ages. And that's why it makes me think of the Ubisoft stuff, because it's like, here's some stuff. And it's like, you know, AC Odyssey had that. Sorry, AC Origins had that.
Yeah.
Where you were, that game was very much aping Breath of the Wild in terms of like, here's an opening space and then we're going to open you up, which I feel like that's probably what this is doing too.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I enjoy the opening more than you, but it certainly takes a long time to get going and it doesn't necessarily make the best first impression because it is, like you said, trying to bridge the gap. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to the Forbidden West for a long, long time, essentially. Yeah. You don't get to like the proper bulk of the open world for, like you said, you know, 10 hours or so. Mm-hmm. But once you do get there, for me, it just became what I enjoyed about the first game. I know you might think that is perhaps a negative because it is so similar.
That's the best thing about it. It's just that at every step of the way, it reminded me of Zero Dawn. This game feels like Zero Dawn without the story pull, which is like, that can be as big of a meter as you want because like the gameplay is phenomenal for what it is. And all the animations are phenomenal. It looks absolutely gorgeous. Like that's the thing. It obviously has a marked step up in quality over Zero Dawn, even though that game did get a PS5 update thing. But that's kind of the big standout positive is the visuals.
Yeah.
Whereas like in Zero Dawn, it was paced so well. They had so many great reveals, the mystery. Aloy as a character had way more to her, like figuring out who she was in the eyes of the Nora, but in the tribe, and she didn't have a mum, and all the stuff with Elizabeth Sobeck. And like, there was so many things there that were built. And it's such a great arc, like over time, which isn't in here at all. Like they kind of seed some stuff at the start of this of like all the work that she did in Zero Dawn is actually for naught because all the stuff with Gaia and the AIs is still out there, still needs to be solved. So she's kind of a fake messiah and everyone's still calling her savior and you see her sort of struggle with that, but then they don't do anything else with it. And then she starts referring to herself as the savior and then she's having to go at people because they still believe in the old world or they whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you actually writing for this character at this
point? I think it's difficult. Like when it comes to like the main story, it's had a lot of reveals that I've really enjoyed. But I think the writing is, it's really spotty in a lot of places. Yeah. The side missions have been my favorite thing to do. I think the side missions have a lot of interesting characters. I think they're well written. They take sometimes some turns that you don't expect. But I think one of my issues with the game is that Aloy herself, like you said, in the original was memorable, had a distinct arc. And here, I haven't felt connected to her and her story because her story is kind of just her wanting to save the world, which is of course good. But when you have a 30-hour main campaign and I want some more depth to her, I want some more dimensions to her. I want to know what she's bad at as well as what she's good at because she's good at everything, and that's quite cool because she's definitely justified that. But it's kind of like I want to see her fail more, perhaps. You know, I want to see her kind of like have run into an issue that she can't solve or she needs the help of other people. And that kind of is a thread that goes throughout. But overall, there's just, I don't know, man, there's something about her character where I just don't feel, she feels like a clone. You know, she is a clone and she feels like one throughout. And towards the end of the game, they've kind of like started to do more with that. They've started to define her more and what makes her, you know, special in comparison to Elizabeth Sobeck, for instance. But yeah, like so much of it, she's just kind of something that the player should project on. And this comes to my point that I mentioned to you this morning. I actually wish this game was just a full-on RPG because it already has kind of pretensions of that. You know, you look
it might
at the way
it is, to be honest.
I think in a lot of ways it is. Like the side missions especially might as well be ripped out of something like The Witcher 3, you know. The world, the way it's structured, is very much like The Witcher 3, but it's lacking the player's control over the central protagonist. And you do get dialogue options, but you don't get to tailor really who Aloy is. You get a few where you can, like, you know, like in the first game, you can talk compassionately, you can talk intellectually or whatever to solve a problem that way, but they're few and far between. And I just feel like the issue with her characterization that I have would be solved if I could personalize it more and make her more direct, if I could make her, you know, believe in certain things or, you know, approach certain things in this way, rather than have her kind of be this person who is just like, hard to explain, just like generalized,
just
I suppose.
Getting on with stuff.
Yeah, getting on with stuff.
I think it's a weird beat because they write, like I said, I refer to it as like a diamond structure plot-wise, narrative-wise, because everything blows out from the first game. And it's like, well, here's all this open world stuff that you can do, blah, blah, blah. And then it ties back in again at the very end, which like some of the best games should. But in terms of an overall trilogy structure, I wonder how much, you know, they're writing this to be as wide as possible so that she's almost doesn't have a specific arc anymore. I also wonder how much Guerrilla knew they'd be doing an entire multi-part franchise back at the beginning, because this doesn't feel like a planned installment. Like, in terms of, you know, the first game was like everything got answered apart from the one thing at the very end, like post-credit scene with Silence and Hades, and then it's like, okay, where did that signal come from that activated Hades? Let's go explore that. And I guess, like, yeah, but that's the very fact that that is post-credits and everything else is answered. Horizon could almost be a one-off, like for the first game. It's like a perfect little one-off. And the stuff that they pick out and prod out here, I feel like they're expanding the world to be like, here's all these different tribes, here's all these different belief systems, and all these different ways to be. Because I think I said this last week, but it's like now the IP has to support so much more. There's a movie coming, there's a VR experience coming, there's obviously going to be a third game and everything. And so it almost has to be watered down to spread it out more. Like, it's just, it's one of those things where it's not that it's not that satisfying in the moment, but it doesn't have the drive and the passion that Zero Dawn had in terms of the character writing.
Yeah.
Like, I love the build, the whole game build of, you know, Aloy being on the receiving end of like, oh, you're barely worth anything because you don't have a mom, and who are you really? And she's finding out this stuff about the past and then who she is and whatever. And it all builds to that one scene where, you know, she comes out of the big mech door having activated everything because she has the DNA of Elizabeth Sobeck. And all the people who were chastising her all bow to her, and they're all and just on a dime. They're just sort of like, "Oh, actually, no, you're the anointed. We love you." And I love her reaction. It's like my favorite scene in that whole game. Mm-hmm. She's like, "I am not your anointed," and I just love. She's like, "Get up off the floor. Don't talk to me. Like, who are you now?" Like, I just love that scene. And there's nothing like that in this game at all.
Yeah, I feel like you said, you know, there's kind of such interesting ideas, but that in this game amounts to people saying, "You're the savior of Meridian," and she says, "I'm just Aloy," and she'll say that over and over again for like 20 hours, you know. And it's kind of like, okay, but what else is there? Yeah. For me, when I look at the cast of characters, I just see more interesting people that I want to spend more time with. I see Catalo is obviously great. I love Zoe. I think Zoe is excellent. You know, there's a lot of Tanakh, especially the Tanakh female warriors that are like really interesting and well-written. Regala is a great villain. You know what I mean? I just feel like Aloy herself is surrounded by interesting people, and intentionally Guerrilla don't give her time to kind of like stop and sit down and kind of be fleshed out. Because admittedly, in the plot, she is always on the move. You know, she's intentionally pushing down a lot of her feelings so she can get to the next point.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I need a bit more. I need to see, you know, it's teased all the way through about her relationship with Rost and how did she ever like get over that or whatever? Like, how was she feeling about that? Because she went through so much loss. Mm-hmm. She encountered so much loss in that first game, and then she pushed it all down, which is quite, makes for interesting drama, but not necessarily an interesting character to follow who doesn't open up in that way.
They do have a scene where she talks about Rost that I thought was weirdly handled. Like, it'd be something that'll come up in the ending, explain stuff, because it was just something where I was like, you've kind of, the way you've weaved that narrative line, I would rather you didn't. I know that's vague as hell.
I think, but I got to this, and I think I actually liked it, which is interesting. When we do the spoiler podcast, we'll talk about it more in depth.
But yeah, that's the one thing that I think could potentially be in its favor, is that, you know, she is very much done with, like I said, it was almost like a product of coming after the anointed scene from Zero Dawn, because this is only 6 months after, and it's one of those things where she's kind of just, she's so done with everything, and that could just be that she literally has the weight of the world on her shoulders, and so she's just like, can you just do this? Can you get on with this? I'm just Aloy. Can you just do these things? But it doesn't feel that consistent. I think that it lacks an arc. She pretty much ends the game where she starts, in terms of where she is as a person, which is completely different to Zero Dawn. And obviously, if this is a middle installment, maybe when we look back on it after a third one, this will just feel like this propulsive sort of big mesh of a middle installment that can support a movie and a VR experience and whatever. And they'll do more character work in the third one or something. But yeah, it's fascinating to watch all the responses to it, because I feel like it is absolutely stunning. It is a showcase of what a PS5 can do. Guerrilla have actually knocked it out of the park with the PS4 one as well. Like, watching the gameplay clips for that, it still seems incredible on PS4, even though it is a massive step up on PS5. But yeah, we'll dive into Horizon and everything else going forward. There's Cyberpunk's update, which I don't know if anyone else is going to get back to that thing. That game's great now.
I love this. I love this podcast because at the start we were like, there's so much to talk about. We won't talk about Horizon today. We'll talk about it like maybe tomorrow or something. And then we got into it. It's like, well, we can't not talk about Horizon.
I know, right?
You know?
It's just, that's the thing. I'm like, Horizon is the big game right now. And obviously Elden Ring is going to be on Friday. That'll be the thing that crosses over multiple platforms and everything. It's worth throwing in here, the Ollie Ollie world is phenomenal. I hit credits on that game yesterday. Gorgeous game, phenomenal soundtrack, brilliant controls, great little skateboarding game, like best skating game in how long? Like, I mean, Skate 2, it's been a while. Like, obviously there's Pro Skater Remix, but I mean, like, yeah. It's a new thing. Ollie Ollie World is brilliant. I'm mentioning that game because it's going to get absolutely, it is drowning in amongst everything else. But yeah, we'll dive into Elden Ring going forward. But this week's main podcast, we'll revisit Horizon in a bit more depth because I know Ben Roy's going through it as well. And we'll see what else we can touch on. If any other things break, we'll talk about them. But for now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be listened to you by anyone
that's
else.
That's right. That's the thing.
That's the
that's
English.
The official podcaster
that's
over
the time,
there.
And we'll catch you all next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.